Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to lead a happy, healthy life. As such, has set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect their emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join show host, healer, and founder of Inner Healers in Peru, Susana Stiglich, while she unravels each topic hand in hand with her wise guests. Many people around the world have improved their lives thanks to their sharing through the Inner Healers community. Join us for a joyful experience. Shows are recorded, so you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or whenever needed.
Hello everybody, how are you doing today? Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglich and I will be your host today. Our topic for this month is spirituality. And within this topic, today we will be talking about spiritual transformation of addictions with Mary Cook. She is the author of Grace Lost and Found, From Addictions and Compulsions to Satisfaction and Serenity. She has a master's degree in 35 years of clinical practice, 29 years of university teaching experience, and this is her second time here with us. So help me welcome Mary Cook. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Luciana. What a wonderful
Hello,
day.
Dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really wonderful to have you here with us today. So
Thank you. Tell us,
you wrote an article where you said a couple of things that are really important for me today to mention. First of all, you said that when we feel empty, broken, damaged, and demeaned, it's because we have forgotten the spirit within us. Can you talk to us a little bit more about this?
Yes. You know, I think that when we come into this life and bad things happen to us, you know, we are harmed, we are abused, we are abandoned, we are mistreated in some kind of way, and we sense that, you know, our survival depends on our environment and the people who are in our life with us. And so we stop focusing on what is deep within us, our true self and where we have come from and our spiritual being, and we just focus on the outside environment because it feels like that's what we need to do in order to survive. And also because to maintain awareness of our spiritual being while living in a very, very disturbing, scary, dangerous environment, it's too painful for us. So we let go of that awareness of spirituality very often when we have difficulties in our early life. And the worst part of it is that then if the environment continues to be stressful and there's no healing and there's no help from anywhere, then we maintain this focus on our outer environment and outer people, and we maintain a focus where we are reactive to things and we're always posed to fend things off and defend and protect ourselves. And so we're looking for negativity and we're focused on, you know, the best we can do to protect ourselves from the most negativity. And so it's one of the ways in which we just lose that conscious awareness of the truth deep inside of us. And so at some point, hopefully, we come to a point where we realize this isn't working, my perspective isn't working, my thinking, my feelings, the way I live my life isn't working, and I need to reexamine things. And that's when we can reconnect. But there's a great disconnection that happens when we are traumatized and stressed and there's no healing at the time. We really just disconnect from the sense of higher power and our true self and life as it really is because we're trying to protect ourselves.
So would you say that focusing ourselves just in our outer life instead of our inner life kind of despiritualizes our life?
I think that, what's healthy is when we have a balance between our spiritual being and our human being. But when things get too dark and negative, then typically we just focus on the human aspects and the earthly aspects because we're trying to survive. And so we let go of the spiritual aspects. But I think that we need to be integrated and we need to be balanced with both. I think both are important. And I believe that's how we start off. Babies spend a lot of time sleeping and they spend a lot of time, with their eyes just, usually very often they don't focus on a person's face that's looking on them, but all around a person's face. They're so in touch with that spiritual world, and yet they also can be in touch with the human world. And so I think we start off with a balance, but when things are difficult for us, we end up losing, this great treasure that we have within us.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that somehow walking through the Maslow's hierarchy of needs can help us develop our spirituality?
I think that, yes, I think we have to start with survival. I think we have to start with, can we trust? Because when we're babies, our simple basic needs are so important. And so I think that, to have happiness, to have health, we have to start with the basics. We have to start with, am I safe right now? And do I have shelter? And do I have enough food? And then I believe that from the simple basic needs, then we get to the psychological needs, we get to the social needs, we get to the spiritual needs. But yes, the basics have to be met, and I think that's the reason why so often in infancy or childhood, when things are really, really stressful and traumatic, that those basic needs felt that a feeling of I'm not safe, and keeps us from progressing further, I think, at least psychologically.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that called my attention of your article was this: symptoms and cravings do not define a person or a life. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, the symptoms and cravings come from when we do disconnect from our true self and our higher power and to protect ourselves and go inward, then what happens, because now we are experiencing ourselves not whole. We are experiencing ourselves not to be holy. And so that feels so awful on some level that we look for something outside of us to fix us. So we are vulnerable to addictions and compulsions because whether it's food or whether it's drugs or, whether it's money or power, whatever it is, we're looking for something to complete us and give us that sense of fulfillment inside. And so as we do that, we're going to acquire more symptoms because that's going the wrong direction. Those things, things that we can get from the outside to try to give us the feeling that we are whole and we are happy and we are healthy and we are safe, those outside things don't really work. And so the longer we are attached to that, the farther away we get from the real treasure inside, which is really the answer. And so life gives us symptoms and it gives us negative consequences specifically to tell us that we're going in the wrong direction. But if we are so attached to the addictions or the compulsions, then we might override all of those signs until things get so bad that we can't override it anymore, and we really do recognize that we're in a bad place, and our thinking and our habits have gotten us in this place, and we need to find a way out.
Mm-hmm. So how would you define spirituality?
I think it's an awareness of a divine presence. It's an awareness of true wholeness and holiness within us. That there's actually, it's the feeling of I am, meaning I am the true self. I don't need anything to fix me. I don't need to play a role. I really just am. There is this sense of pure being, and pure being that is deeply connected with some sort of power greater than ourselves, that is healthy, that is helpful, that is loving, with life itself, with the people, that we have the ability to see past the earthly human defensiveness and into the depth of someone. We can see that I am inside of ourselves. We can see it inside of others. And when we feel that connection with divine presence, by whatever name we give that or however it appears to us, we can see that in life. We can see that in animals and plants and the earth and people.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience, how can developing our spirituality help us transform our addictions?
I think that, you know, what happens when we reach a point where we just can't live like this any longer, the addictions have just, you know, taken the best of everything, and we maybe don't even want to live this way, that then, you know, this part of us that recognizes there's a problem and that our life, the way we're living our life, isn't working, is also the part that is willing to surrender the addiction. So I think then we can use however higher power comes to us and say, please help me. There is a part of me willing to surrender this addiction, knowing that it doesn't work, and I want to give it to you. I want to surrender it. I want to relieve myself of it. And so that we, in surrendering, you know, whatever the addiction is, means surrendering everything that's attached to it, the cravings, the fear, the pain, the hopes, the rituals, the lifestyle, the thoughts and feelings, all of it. And so we practice this surrender. I give this up. I am really freely, willingly allowing myself to relinquish this. And I give it to my higher power. I give it to divine presence. And we practice that until we start to feel, because it takes us a while before we really want this authentically. It starts with just a tiny part of ourselves. But the more that we have this practice and we say this, and more we begin to feel it, and when it finally becomes authentic, that yes, I truly, all of me, really want to surrender all of this, that's when we get this lightness and this freedom. But even before that, we start getting little bits and pieces of feeling more light, feeling freer, feeling relief, feeling hope, feeling inspired. So it happens in all along in little bits and pieces, but finally it feels like, I really feel that it is gone now. All of it is gone. And then, you know, I think the next step is to give everything else to our higher power, all that we know ourselves to be, all that we know our lives to be, so that we can be completely emptied of what our human mind has conceived of life and has conceived of our identity, so that then we can be filled with the truth, with the essence, with the core of who we are and what our life is really about. So it's a practice of purification, cleansing, and surrendering that really allows us that deep reconnection, I think, to the source of the highest, purest love.
Mm-hmm. So how can we recognize we have an addiction?
Well, I think that we have all of these signs, you know. I mean, we have negative experiences. People are complaining to us, or people are leaving us. We're losing things, not just losing things like maybe job or health or people in our life or even freedom, but losing self-respect, losing our sanity, you know. I just think there's plenty of signs. And that when we start consciously becoming aware that, you know, the pain of how I'm living my life has maybe gotten to a depth that I will not continue to survive, at least psychologically survive this depth of pain, then I think we become willing to begin to break down the defense mechanisms and the walls that we've built between us and what can be.
Mm-hmm. So how does over-controlling affect us, affect our development, our spiritual development?
I think that, you know, the whole quest for acquiring and possessing and controlling, you know, is about that we've forgotten who we really are, and we think that we have to grab a hold of things and attach to things, and that kind of over-controlling means that we feel that we are not enough and we don't have enough. It means that we have forgotten our true essence and where we come from. And so, you know, I think part of the transformation process is also developing a support system of people who understand addictions and who now live healthy lives free from addictions, and begin to have new kinds of relationships with these people. It's a whole new culture in which spiritual principles are practiced, in which people learn to be honest. And sometimes it's not even so much a matter of people consciously lying when they have addictions. It certainly includes that. But other times the person doesn't really have any clue what the truth is, and they're asked a question and they just answer something off the top of their mind. But they haven't connected deeply enough to themselves to really know the truth. So it's listening to other people who have been free of addictions longer, who have been living a healthy and spiritual life longer, and hearing them speak the truth and hearing them speak about their journey. And then the new person begins to have these experiences inside. And it's not so much mental experiences as it is intuitive and gut feelings and experiences of the heart, emotional experiences of, I feel that too. I know that too. That person is speaking about me. I've been through that as well. And so in that way, very often people begin to connect with the honesty inside themselves. But very often when people go, you know, there's a progression to addictions, and some people progress very deeply into addictions before they go into any sort of treatment or recovery. And so, you know, it can take them a long time of hearing a lot of people share before they begin to put the pieces together and recognize that, that's them too, and they can begin to share honestly.
Mm-hmm. What would you tell people who might have found themselves over-controlling or living a limitless life and because of fear now negate the joy of earthly pleasures?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the word. Fear is the word for them to become aware of. To become aware that I'm over-controlling because I'm afraid. I'm afraid that if I don't over-control, things will happen that I won't like, and that will be stressful and traumatic to me. And, you know, and I think very often this goes back to when we are young children. We are so vulnerable and helpless and dependent, and we have no control. We're powerless and we're helpless. And the bigger people in life have all the control and we have none. And if trauma happens to us at that time in our life, very often in the child's mind, this idea gets implanted and reinforced that, you see, the problem is not having control. If I could only have control, I'd be okay. And so very often that child feeling of I had no control and terrible things happened, so today I need control, is there in adulthood. And so part of examining, well, what happens if I don't control this person, place, or situation right now? What happens if I don't control it? Will I really be in a terrible state of affairs? And to try to go back to childhood and ask ourselves, now, when I didn't have control in childhood, what was the worst thing that happened? And there we uncover, that's where the trauma was. That's where the great stress was. So now let me fast forward to today. What if I don't control this aspect of my life today? Will something that terrible happen again? And generally the answer is no, nothing like that, nowhere near. And so it's the child's fear of, but if I'm not in control, terrible things will happen. And so then we begin to talk to this child part of us and calm and comfort and reassure this child part of us and hopefully, you know, do some work with someone, whether it's enter into counseling or enter into 12-step program with the sponsor, but some kind of work. And it's very important that we do this kind of work, you know, healing of any childhood trauma or stress with a person. Because our mind, even if 100% we want to get as well as we possibly can and heal, we have unconscious defense mechanisms. So we're not aware of all the blocks and all the things that interfere with our wellness and our healing, but someone else who is practiced in this can be able to see through that and help guide us in that journey. But generally, when we are over-controlling, it goes back to childhood where we had no control and terrible things happen. And we need to be able to have discernment between our life today as an adult and our life as a child and begin to practice giving up some of that control. Let me just practice, I'm not going to control this today. I've already realized that if I don't, nothing traumatic is going to happen. So let me just practice giving that up. And also what I said before is helpful when we do this kind of practice as well, and that is to reconnect with some source of a power greater than ourselves that's helpful and loving to us so that we have that spiritual sense, that divine sense that is with us as we do this human practice of healing.
Can relinquishing greed for gratitude help us with this?
Oh, gratitude is probably the most magical feeling because it builds on itself. When we can count our blessings and be grateful, even for the very simple things, you know, so many people in the world don't have hot water or electricity or enough food to eat or enough shelter or safety. When we can be grateful for the simple things up to the bigger things, then what happens with this feeling of gratitude, and it's not, and it may even start, if we don't have the feeling of gratitude, it may just start with a list. We intellectually say, okay, I'm going to be thankful for this, this, this. And that's okay if we start with it, but we want to end up with the feeling that we actually feel what it's like to, you know, I have all my body parts, you know. I have legs and arms and feet and hands and look what I can do with them. And I have my vision and I have all my physical senses and you know, look at the gifts that this brings. That if we end up with a feeling about it, then it attracts more things into our life and more awareness of the beauty in the world, more awareness of awe and wonder, more awareness of everything inside of ourselves and everything inside of our life, we begin to notice things and we begin to look at things more deeply. And so it really, really connects us to the beauty and the love and the powerful positive energy that's inside of ourselves and in our world when we are grateful.
Mm-hmm. Can focusing on our healthy talents, interests, and dreams help us with this too?
I think that when we begin reconnecting with who we really are, when we stop thinking that we're broken and damaged and seeking some outside fix, but really, you know, building on that gratitude, as I said, of what, not only, you know, that I have my basic needs met, but that, you know, here are the wonderful things that were created inside of me that I can share with others, that I can demonstrate with others. And we, when we are reconnected with our true self and we're not looking for something to fix us, and we are interacting with people in a whole different way, then we begin to become aware of the talents, and we become aware of them in a different way. I think that sometimes when we're looking for fixes and we think we're broken and damaged, we are aware of a talent. We might be great at something. We might be a great, you know, athlete, or we might be a great singer or something. But that's just one more thing that we're trying to use to fix us and make us whole and give us happiness. And because we're looking at it as a, this needs to fix me because I feel so broken and I feel so awful and I have so much pain inside of me, it doesn't work. So even though we might be consciously aware of a great talent, we're also aware that, you know, but why isn't it working? Why isn't it making me happy? Why isn't it bringing me a sense of fulfillment and wholeness? And it's because we're still disconnected with our whole self. So when we have reconnected with our true self and we become aware of talents, or we, you know, we've always been aware of them, but now we look at them in a different way, and we look at them as, look what we have to share with the world. And this is just one of an infinite number of things within me and in my life that I get to share with the world. And so it's not looked on as a fix, it's looked at as one of many wonderful things about us. And then that grows, just like gratitude allows things to grow. Now new talents come. Now we continue to increase in our abilities, and we get very curious about things, and we want to know more, and we want to try new things, and we want to, you know, run out of that tiny little envelope we've been living in when we were looking for fixes, and we want to join the big wide world. And we get excited about, I want to learn this, I want to learn that. But it's a totally different frame of reference. It's about, I am, and I am in this world, and I am spiritual, and I am human. I am deeply connected with everyone, and we're all in this journey together, helping one another together, and enjoying all of these things that are a part of us. But nothing is looked at as a fix, and that makes the difference.
Can our spiritual development work like a bridge between addictions and our commitment to the development of our creative talents?
I think that, you know, it all starts with creation. And I think that we are creative beings. And I believe that when we are appreciative of the multiple diverse creations on Earth, we have a joy of finding that creative energy within ourselves as well. And we find that, you know, when we have a newness, you see, creativity is about newness and fresh perspective. And when we're scared, you know, we don't want anything new and fresh. You know, we want to stay in the old place because we're just so scared. But when we're no longer scared because we're reconnected spiritually and we've done some healing, then we realize that there's always an energy to be creative inside of us. You know, little children who are healthy, who live with healthy people and living in healthy environments, they are continuously creative, continuously learning and growing with great, great joy. And I think that that's how we can be as adults as well. But it involves surrendering the fear and reconnecting to the truth inside of us.
How can spirituality help us experience freedom, you know, as in free of addictions, free to create?
I think, you know, that freedom, the first part of getting free is recognizing just how imprisoned we are, you know, by habitual thoughts or behaviors or feelings or keeping ourselves in a tiny environment. To first recognize, where am I imprisoning myself as an adult? Where do I keep myself tiny? Where do I keep myself tight and constricted and closed off? And so recognizing where we do that, then we can ask for help to let go of that tightness, let go of that rigidity. And I think that, you know, and we also, I think what very often works alongside of recognizing where we keep ourselves closed off and not free is recognizing, seeing that in other people and in animals and in experiences in life, and giving others a greater sense of freedom. I think that, you know, when we practice not only asking for things ourselves and receiving help and freeing ourselves, when we are also freeing other people, how can I create more freedom for this person or for this animal or for the earth or for the plants or for this experience? How can I create more freedom? Then I think we begin to see where we just unconsciously, automatically, we keep things more tightly controlled than they need to be. And so I think, you know, we look for it everywhere in life. You know, addictions is about being so closed off and closed in. And so when we begin to lift off the defenses and the ways in which we've imprisoned ourselves, then we see it everywhere. We see the prisons everywhere, and we see the freedom everywhere. And we begin to work for greater freedom in general, as well as inside of ourselves. And we know how that feels. It feels light, and we feel like we are energized, and we feel that we are lifted up.
And so would you say, I'm sorry, would you say freedom then arises from the full recognition of our highest self, our unique purpose, and how we serve others in this lifetime?
Oh, I think so, yes. That is the freedom to be all that we were created to be, the freedom to give all that is within us to give. You know, it's just so unlimited. And that's what it really is. It's about giving up anything that constrains us from our true self and our spiritual being and our spiritual experience in this lifetime. Giving all of that up and continuing to practice. You can't just give it up once. It will come back out of habit. So a continual kind of cleansing, purification, and giving up of all that keeps us constrained, and appreciating the freedom and giving it to others. It's not grabbing a hold of things and possessing and controlling things. It is always, what do I need to give up? Let me give up all the prisons in which I am enclosed in, and let me see that for others and help others to do that. And what is inside of me to give to the world, to life, to others, to myself? And that is continuous, and that is unfolding infinitely. And so that's when I think we, you know, that is, as you said, I think that is our true purpose in this lifetime. To get free and to give everything.
Mm-hmm. You're the author of Grace Lost and Found, From Addictions and Compulsions to Satisfaction and Serenity. Can you talk to us briefly about what is your experience while writing this book?
You know, I wrote the book because people asked me to write a book wherever I would speak, or when I was teaching, or in my counseling sessions. People would say, you know, I would like a book. I'd like to have things to read and from you, so I can kind of continue pour over them. And so I wrote the book for all the people that I knew, and I wrote the book for the people that I hadn't met yet, because it just felt like that was part of me giving of myself in a different way. You know, sometimes people would come to my counseling sessions and they would bring a tape recorder or they'd bring a notepad and they'd say, stop, you know, wait, I want to get that recorded or I want to write that down or say that again to me, because they wanted to go over it at different times to remind themselves of it. And so that's really what the book was for. And I... And it was a wonderful experience of pouring all of that into the book. You know, it was a mind and heart and soul experience, and I enjoyed it. And it always, you know, when I'm, you know, I don't teach other people to practice any principles that I haven't practiced myself. And so it was also a wonderful reminder for me. You know, the teacher is always being reminded of their own practices and their own fine-tuning and discernment to continue to improve their practices. And so it was wonderful in that regard, too, for me to immerse myself in that process and continuously do it as I was writing the book.
Mm-hmm. Many recovery books are written for beginners, but yours is made up of 40 essays with their own set of practices and affirmations, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So how come you decided to write it this way?
Well, what I had done was I realized I wrote about a lot of different things, and so I put them in categories. And then at the end of each article, I wanted to write personal growth questions so that people, if they wished, could form groups. And many people have told me that they have formed small groups where they read an article and then they talk about what they got out of that article, and then they discuss the questions, the personal growth questions, and then they answer them. And make, you know, and then in answering the questions, they are making a commitment to, this is what I will work on in the next week or the next month until I meet with my group again. And then, you know, at the next group meeting, people talk about the progress that they've made and what they were working on and answering those questions. Because a lot of people, you know, this is funny, because some people get addicted to reading self-help books. That's another addiction. And the way that it's an addiction is when people just read them, looking for the reading to facilitate some sort of magical transformation without them actually changing anything about themselves or doing any work or healing or growing or practicing new behaviors. They just are hoping that in the reading of self-help books, vicariously, they will be transformed and feel better about themselves. And so that's what I'm calling an addiction. Versus people who read a self-help book and really immerse themselves in it and say, let me practice this, let me give this up, let me try this healing technique, let me work with other people who can hold me accountable, and that we can do this together as a group. So to read a self-help book and really work that book, I think, you know, that's what really allows us to transform, not just the reading itself. So that's why I put the affirmations, that's why I put the personal growth questions, and why I said in the introduction that I really encourage people to use the book, you know, with others so that there can be this system of accountability and encouragement and, you know, an inspiration from others, because this is the whole thing about reconnecting. We need to reconnect with people in healthy ways, reconnect with our true self, reconnect with higher power in healthy ways.
When we just made the event on Facebook, you must remember, there was somebody who had so much anger and resentment inside and started placing lots of angry comments towards the interview or the topic of the interview. In your experience, does anger and resentment hinder our spiritual evolution?
You know, when we are angry you know, I think we need, anger is often a defensive emotion, not that there isn't, you know, a burst of anger that could certainly be a normal response to something, but very often anger is a defensive feeling. And by defensive, I mean it hides the fear, it hides the need, it hides the vulnerability, it hides the hurt, it hides the pain. And very often, and especially in Western culture, you know, we feel more powerful when we are angry, when we're self-righteous, when we're arrogant. But really, those are defensive feelings, hiding the vulnerable feelings inside. Usually when we have a great deal of anger and resentment, or strong anger and resentment, it's the feeling that we're going to hang on to, and we're going to define ourselves and our life by, and we're going to overuse it to keep people at a distance because we are so afraid of the harm that's been done to us. We are so afraid of the hurt, that we've lost something. We have so much fear inside. We don't want people to see the fear, and so we put out the anger instead.
Mm-hmm. The most common kinds of addictions, or the most known, are alcohol, drugs, and abusive relationships. Are there any other kind of addictions for our listeners?
I'm sorry, the last part of it, are there any other kind of addictions for what now? For?
Yeah, for our listeners, are there any kind,
other kind of addictions? Yeah. Right. All of the, you know, really, just about anything can be an addiction, even something healthy. If we're exercising, we can have an exercise addiction now. Exercise is healthy. But if we go too far, and the reason we're going to go too far in exercise and injure ourselves or weaken ourselves or, you know, get out of balance in our life is because we, again, it's the perspective, it's the frame of reference. If we're looking at exercise as this is going to fix me, this is going to make me a beautiful person or a handsome person or a powerful person or whatever, you know, intimidating person even, you know, and whatever it is, or it make me a big star athlete or something. If we're using something as a fix, we're going to overdo it. We're going to be excessive in it. We're going to be putting all our eggs in that one basket, you know, hoping that that's going to somehow save us or redeem us or make us as wonderful as we wish to be. And of course, it can never work no matter what it is. And so we're going to go beyond healthy, and we're going to injure ourselves and weaken ourselves and stress ourselves. And in the end, we're going to be greatly disappointed that it didn't work. It didn't work. You know, I thought that was going to fix me, make me feel good. So really anything can be an addiction if we are overdoing it and we're using it as a fix because we don't want to do any healing work inside. We don't want to look at what are the things that I feel to be wrong with me? What are the things that I feel need healing? What are the things that I'm running away from that I'm scared of? And let me find some safe person or people or group or, you know, to do some work on this so I don't have to run away and look for a fix. But really anything can be an addiction.
We're in the last couple of minutes of our show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in the last couple of minutes of our show. Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners on spiritual transformation of addictions?
Oh, I just think that, you know, when we can develop the courage to listen to that tiny voice inside of us saying, this isn't working, it isn't working, you know, it's causing more problems, and we can open up our heart to a higher power and a support system of people who can help us, who understand us, that, you know, we can then give up this trying to overpossess and over-control and over, you know, over-need and grab a hold of things and enter this pure loving state of being where we just stand in awe and wonder with gratitude and give full presence to our heart and our soul experience and appreciate all the lessons that we have to learn in this life, because all the lessons in life, you know, the negative things, the bad things that happen to us in life can allow us to reach out to higher power and other people and heal and become so much more than we ever thought was able, and so that we were able to become, and to just to feel the unity, the wholeness and the holiness that really is our pure truth within us, and to see that in the world and see that in others. That's what's waiting for us. That's the paradox of this, is we're hanging on to some tiny little thing that we're overdoing and over-controlling that we think will fix us. And if we let go and reconnect and rediscover what really is true, my goodness, it's infinite. It's just infinite.
Yeah, we're infinite beings. Thank you, Mary, for being with us today. It has been a real pleasure. Thank you very much, and hope to have you again soon.
Thank you so much, Luciana. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.